The Rose in the Middle of Winter by Bob Chilcott. It was sung by Commotio, conducted by Matthew Berry. A Naxos recording doing rather well in the specialist classical chart at the moment. Well, that's all for another Sunday morning. I'll be back next week, and as well as seasonal fare, we'll be remembering Wolfgang Sawallisch with Schumann's Fourth Symphony. Sawallisch, who died earlier this year. Also on the menu, a healthy dose of Puccini, whose birthday also falls next Sunday. So stand by for Leontine Price, Luciano Pavarotti, Mirella Freni, Renata Scotto and Carlo Begonzi. So all that and more next Sunday from 9. I'm James Jolly. Thanks for your company, and I do hope you've enjoyed my choice of music today. So instead of last-minute Christmas shopping, do join me again next week at the same time. Sunday Morning is a unique production for BBC Radio 3, with studio production this morning by Neil Miners.
You're saying your whole married life...
My whole married life was a vile sham.
Ibsen. Adapted and directed by Richard Eyre, this weekend in Radio 3's Drama on 3.
You sent me back to my husband because it was the right thing to do.
Ghosts, Henrik Ibsen's provocative tale of family secrets and lies, featuring the cast of the recent production for the Almeida Theatre, a tale that shocked audiences in the 1880s and still keeps its original power and energy.
I thought the truth would come out in the end, so I built the orphanage as a smokescreen.
Drama on 3, tonight at 10 o'clock on BBC Radio 3.
Now, Private Passions, with another chance to hear Michael Barclay in conversation with designer Jasper Conran in a programme first broadcast in 2009.
Jasper Conran is a hugely successful and influential figure in the fashion world, but he's also designed costumes for opera, dance, and the theatre. I imagine that your childhood must have been really exciting from the point of view of design, your father being Terence Conran, Habitat, all of that surrounding you. I mean, couldn't have failed to influence you a bit.
Well, I suppose not. I'm not going to resist the idea that it did. Though I wasn't particularly conscious, actually, at the time of who I was running into. There was Mary Quant, there was Barbara Hulinicki, there were extraordinary people I met. So I suppose, yes.
When did you first get the sort of feeling that this was something you were going to do? I mean, did you start making drawings as a child?
Very, very early as a child, I think, probably when I was about 8. I was more interested in cloth and shaping cloth. So that really was how it went. And I drew all through school, much to my teacher's annoyance. And it went on from there, really.
Although your clothes look wonderful on models, I mean, the secret of your success to a certain extent is that it also translates to a large part of the buying public, doesn't it? That lots of people can wear these clothes and feel good about them.
I've always thought that, actually, if you have an idea, in order to make it a good idea, it's got to translate into a wider audience. Anybody really can pin cloth on a very thin, beautiful girl and make it look ravishing. It's more complex to make a very well-cut pair of trousers. You know, there's an art to that.
And music, looking through your list, obviously has been important for quite a while. I mean, it's been a sort of companion in some ways.
Well, yes, all my life. I grew up playing the cello and the flute and the piano. And I was in the school choir until the inevitable happened.
What, your voice broke, or you were thrown out? Almost?
My voice broke, and then I was thrown out.
Yeah. So this first piece of music is actually The Voice Beautiful, isn't it? And personifies a kind of quintessential England, almost.
Exactly that. Mm. I mean, I'm passionate about England and the countryside and the English. And Kathleen Ferrier, her voice encompasses England for me. It's wistful and it does affect you. It brings a tear to your eye, most definitely.
Blow the wind, sigh. and bring him to me. Is it not sweet to hear the breeze singing as lightly it comes o'er the deep rolling sea? But sweeter and dearer by far 'tis when bringing the bark of my true love in safety to me.
Curiously enough, you were talking about those qualities that you like to put into cloth.
Yeah.
And there were similar ones there, with a simple line, which is very affecting, I mean, elegant and simple and clean in a way. And that's exactly what that kind of folk song has, especially when sung like that.
I was thinking as we were listening to that, you've got the music, but then the voice, the artistry behind that, and the control and the beauty of it is extraordinary. Thinking about what I would choose for this program, it was fascinating going through not just the music, but who was playing the music. Yeah. I mean, Kathleen Ferrier was going to happen, whatever. Her voice reaches out over time and is so touching.
Blow the Wind Southerly, Kathleen Ferrier. I mentioned earlier your excursions into opera, yes, theatre and the stage. Do you enjoy that, the collaborative thing of doing that?
I very much enjoy it. I mean, interestingly, you use the word collaborative, because in the early part of my career, it was quite a lonely place to be, because there was just me, and you're the conduit from which everything comes. And when I first was asked to do theatre, I was terrified, because I'd never worked in collaboration in that way. But to find that you're working towards one piece, to make one piece with so many different brilliant people, is heady. I found it amazing, sort of release, actually. It developed me in no uncertain terms.
And so in a way that fed back perhaps into your everyday design. Yes.
It fed back. It just came like a tsunami all over me. Yes.
Because presumably also the personalities of the directors and the people you were working with opened up new avenues and new light on subjects you didn't know about.
Well, you see, first of all, I had an editor for the first time, to have somebody who you talk to about what you're doing, who has a viewpoint, who can push you and
say no.
And, well, always in the nicest way, I found. I was very lucky to work with David Bintley almost without stopping for over 10 years. And I think that was one of my happiest creative times, without a doubt.
Well, you were talking about the importance of the artist, and the next pianist, in fact, is a friend of yours and a creature of great sparkle.
Yes. Melvin Tan is somebody so extraordinarily charming, and he has huge artistry and huge brilliance, and he carries it lightly. These things don't happen by accident. When you see somebody who's had to have enormous discipline to achieve what they're doing, carrying themselves very lightly and airily, it's amazing to watch. And actually, when I watch him on stage, especially like it when he's interacting with the orchestra, which he does a lot, or when he gets up and conducts the orchestra, it's wonderful. And he's apparently having a ball.
The other interesting thing about him, Jesper Conran, is that he loves to play music on period instruments, or at least on the forte piano.
He does.
Which is, I think, is what we're going to hear next. In fact, is a Schubert piece something you particularly love?
Well, I asked him to play this piece at a show I did. And he played and the show went on. And it's extraordinary that he would think of doing that. But I think that shows what kind of guy he is. He's a great, great pianist, prepared to play during a fashion show. Bully for him.
Melvin Tan, showing that you can be just as passionate on the forte piano as on a modern Steinway, in the impromptu in A-flat, Deutsch 899, number 4, by Schubert. You mentioned, Jasper Conran, that he played for a fashion show, and maybe this is being a bit pretentious of me, but I can't help wondering, I mean, as I was listening to that, I thought, well, you know, there's such ebb and flow, and with those arpeggios, there was almost kind of filigree work. I mean, do you have a sort of, are those analogies there for you at all, or?
Oh, yes, of course they are. You see, that's one of the reasons that I chose the piece. Mm. It's movement and fabric flows. It does, it ebbs and flows, as you say. There was a fantastic stillness in the room at the same time as this was all going on. So it sort of focused you visually and took you somewhere else mentally.
Yeah. Because I think probably there are lots of shows that have rock music beating away. But to have something like that with that kind of elegance is, must be very...
Well, exciting. I mean, and it was an extraordinary thing to do, yes.
The next music I think you originally heard and loved in the Derek Jarman Tempest.
Yes, it's Elizabeth Welsh singing Stormy Weather, but that film was such an important film for people of my generation. And Derek Jarman was such an important figure for people of my generation. And what he does is he brings Elizabeth Welsh out of retirement, and she comes in the film like a wonderful, curious butterfly, beautiful in her old age, stroking sailors and singing it in a way that I don't think is bettered. You can hear this song sung by 50 different people, and you'll never hear it as beautifully sung as by Elizabeth Welsh.
Stormy weather, since my man and I ain't together, keeps raining all the time. Life is bare, gloom and misery everywhere, stormy weather. Just can't get my poor self together. I'm weary all the time, so weary all the time. When he went away, the blues walked in and met. If he stays away, old rocking chair will get me. All I do is pray the Lord above will let me walk in the sun once more. If he stays away, old rocking chair will get me. All I do is pray the Lord above will let me walk in the sun once more.
Oh.
a tie.
Stormy Weather, Elizabeth Welch with the Harold Arlen and Ted Kohler number. Well, from Elizabeth Welch wishing to walk in the sun, we're going to Handel's Where'er You Walk from Semele Act 2. I think this really was music that, in a sense, just bowls you over because of its sheer beauty and touches you.
Handel, really, at the end of the day, is my favourite composer. And Where'er You Walk, it's talking about everybody you love, your song to them. And I find it just deeply touching and slightly melancholy.
Anthony Rolfe Johnson was the tenor there, with the English Baroque Soloists, conducted by John Elliott Gardner, in Handel's Where'er You Walk, from Semele, Act 2, Scene 3. Our next song, Jasper Conran, is, depending on your mindset, I guess, rather naughty.
Well, I mean, it's that great English thing that Kenneth Williams had. It depends on how prurient your mind is as to whether you see this as naughty or not. But nonetheless, I chose this song because it reminds me of George Melly, who was a great friend of mine and a fantastic life force and influence in my life. I think it's very naughty, but rather nice.
And it's because of, as you said, you read into it or you don't. It's up to you.
Please, if you're slightly faint, don't read into it.
But what about the voice itself? What do you think when you hear this sound?
Well, Bessie Smith is, you know, she's... There are the greats. There's Billy, there's Bessie, there's Ella. I actually think that great singers, when they die, they leave this extraordinary gift with us.
And don't you think it crosses all of those awful labels that people use? I mean, after all, there's something about this voice which reminds me a bit of Ferrier, and it's... Even the way it touches me.
I would agree with you. I mean, it's touching and utterly feminine, but it's got force.
Loving is the thing I crave. For your love, I'd be your slave. You gotta give me some. Yes, give me some. Can't you hear me pleading? You gotta give me some. Said Miss Jones to old Butcher Pete, I want a piece of your good old meat. You gotta give me some. Oh, give me some. I crave your round steak. You gotta give me some. Sweetest candy in a candy shop. It's just your sweet, sweet lollipop. You gotta give me some. Please give me some. I love all day suckers. You gotta give me
Bessie Smith, and you've got to give me some. Did you ever, Jasper, design one of George's suits? They were works of art in themselves.
No, I think George had his own ideas about such things are sort of a lot of gangster.
Yes, that's right.
A lot of correspondence and really flashy ties with a lovely, charming, beautiful persona to go with.
And he loved that raucous sound in Bessie's voice, which he did himself. That
he did it himself. Yeah. I was just thinking that took me back to the first sort of grown-up party I went to where he was singing. So that's my first sort of grown-up dancing music.
I think it's fair to say that you won't hear that gravelly growl in our next piece.
No. I don't think Laudate Dominum is really going to...
Benefit
from a gravelly voice. I was in the choir at school and we would go and sing in Salisbury Cathedral or churches all over Dorset. And this reminds me of going around and getting back to school and having really disgusting hot chocolate at the end of the evening.
And the music itself is kind of unbeatable in its melodic invention.
Well, to my mind, it's one of those pieces that I keep on coming back to all the time. I think you gather pieces around you as you live, and this is one of my, obviously, all-time favourites.
Thank you.
has such a wonderful, inexorable, unfolding line, doesn't it, that?
You're reminded of what an incredible genius Mozart was. He takes you up and leaves you and then just brings in this unexpectedness.
That was the wonderful Laudate Dominum from the Solemn Vespers of Mozart, Kirchhoff 339. And we heard Carolyn Sampson, the soprano, with the choir of the King's Consort and the King's Consort, directed by Robert King. Another wonderful voice now, Jasper Conran, and one that I think has been a constant companion in a way.
Ella Fitzgerald, Billie Holiday, really all my life, since I've been playing records. They've been with me, and I've played them constantly. And you know, what's extraordinary is you never, ever, ever tire of either of them. Ella Fitzgerald's got this curious voice because it's a little bit like a little girl's voice. It's this very gentle, vulnerable, sweet, girlish voice. And I've never seen or read very much about Ella Fitzgerald. And it's interesting that her voice really tells the tale of her life. Her voice is her life. She didn't live a very scandalous existence, I don't believe.
Compared to some.
Compared to maybe Billy. Mm. However, she leaves us with something that I shall hope endures forever.
So sharp and tight in that, it made it pretty
extraordinary. She's got an extraordinary orchestra there with her, hasn't she?
Yeah, those little drum riffs and the...
Woof!
Undecided, Shavers and Robin number, sung by Ella Fitzgerald with Chick Webb and his orchestra. Did you feel that your time hearing music at school was important to you, that it opened up a sort of another world?
It was another world. It was a world I escaped to. I wasn't a lover of boarding school, so books and music and singing were part of my escapism, and I'm glad of it.
Probably lucky that you were at a school where one could do that without being beaten up for it.
Yes, I realise now that that was very lucky and encouraged. And the next piece is a Chopin piece, and there was a boy at my school who was a prodigy, a piano-playing musical prodigy, and he was called Christopher Brown. And every morning he would have to get up very early and practice. And this heavenly music would rise up to the dormitories and wake us up in the most lovely way. And I, of course, was desperate to be able to play this, but I'm afraid I never really had the aptitude.
And of course, Chopin was another one of those composers who had that wonderful bittersweet blue note harmony in his music.
Yes, often. Considering it was for dancing.
Yeah, yes. Well, as most music does come from dance forms, and played here by the wonderful Dino Lipatti, who sadly died tragically young. Even in that short piece, there was that gentle middle, what you might call almost call a middle eight, where you know you were suddenly seduced.
Well, you certainly are. I was also remembering my fantastic music teacher, Miss Watson, who I remember trying to teach me syncopation. So she, I think it was an Elvis Presley song she played, and I remember suddenly the Latin master coming racing down the corridor, furious.
The adulteration.
Adulteration of music.
We heard Dino Lupati playing the waltz in G-flat major opus 70 number 1 by Chopin. You went, partially I imagine, to escape the family name, but you went to New York when you were quite young, didn't you? And that must have been very important, sort of eye-opener, I imagine.
It was quite an eye-opener. It was a tremendous release for me, because when you are a child of a very well-known parent's, it can be difficult to find out who you could be, who, you know, you don't really have an identity because your identity is attached somehow in people's minds to your parents.
Son of.
Mm-hmm. I still am.
I think you've got parity now, Jasper.
But going to New York where nobody knew me, you can almost be, you know, it's quite seductive because you can almost create any persona you want. But that was a great time for me. Freedom from, you know, a huge difference between English boarding school and wild New York.
You said how much you love this country and feel indebted to it in many ways. And yet, do you feel that there is the support for designers and young designers? I mean, do we appreciate, do you think, what it's like to get going?
That's a long question to answer. But I think that, yes, we do, because we have the greatest art colleges in the world. And clearly, by virtue of the fact that we train and teach young designers, I think it would only be fair to say that, yes, we do appreciate design. You know, it's what Prince Albert started in the Industrial Revolution required designers, and that became the flowering of design in this country, and that's followed through all ever since, you know.
You don't have any reservations?
Well, my reservation would be that we create the designers but don't create the environment for them to work in. So we create a situation where they have to go all over the world to find work.
Well, it was a good moment to turn then to comfort ye, my people. You were saying how much you love Handel. I think you discovered this piece when you were 20.
I did discover this piece when, well, the Messiah, when I was 20, and it was a revelation to me. And I just got my first car, and I was driving around France, and I must have worn the tape out.
Of him that crieth in the wilderness, prepare ye the way of the Lord, make straight in the desert a highway for our God.
Comfort Ye My People from The Messiah by Handel. We heard Mark Padmore singing fabulously there, I thought. And the 16 were directed by Harry Christophers. The final music we're going to hear, Jasper Conran, not only goes back to your childhood, but, if we're honest, has other purposes in your life.
It does, it does. I gave up smoking, and that being combined with being 48 at the time resulted in middle age spread coming at me so fast I didn't know what hit it. So I decided something had to be done. So I get up very early every morning and I exercise. And I put music on. And the first, every morning without fail, I put Cat Stevens' Morning Has Broken on, because it just puts me in a good frame of mind.
So while we listen to this, we can imagine you doing what exactly? But,
no, I don't want to ruin it for you. No.
Mine is the sunlight, mine is the morning, born of the one light, Eden saw play. Praise with elation, praise every morning, God's recreation of the new day. Morning has broken like the first morning. Blackbird has spoken like the first bird. Praise for the singing, praise for the morning, praise for them springing fresh from the world.
That's another inch off the waist. Morning Has Broken from Cat Stevens. We've not mentioned, Jasper Conran, your china for Wedgwood and your glass for Waterford. So you've suddenly sort of diverted yourself into all kinds of things. Do you enjoy doing...
I very much enjoy. You see, what I learned when I started working in theatre was that all the preconceived barriers that I had myself as to what I could do were being challenged, you know, in every production. They were in my mind. Yeah. And I realised that I didn't have to limit myself. What I find working in other medium is that, first of all, you learn, which I very much enjoy doing. I like going and learning about how things are made, the detail of other products. But in going away from what you normally do, when you come back with a fresh eye.
Well, thank you very much, Jasper Conran, for sharing your musical passions with us today.
Thank you very much.
Michael Barclay was talking to Jasper Conran, and that edition of Private Passions was first broadcast in 2009. Next week, in a Christmas edition of the programme, Michael's guest is the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby. Now, just before the news and today's lunchtime concert, here's a word from Donald MacLeod.
Back in August, we had some modest celebrations for Composer of the Week's 70th birthday. We asked you then who you'd like to hear who'd never been featured on the programme before. You amazed us with a torrent of more than 4,500 suggestions. They're going to keep us going for quite some time to come. But who have we picked to go first? It might have been... Or maybe... It could have been... But in fact, it's none of those. We're going to hear a week of programmes exploring the life and music of a composer we'd never have considered if it hadn't been for your suggestions. A composer who could write and play this. To find out who our special 70th anniversary composer is, join me each day this week at 12 noon and again in the evening.
This is BBC Radio 3, and a very good afternoon from me, John Shea. In a couple of minutes, a lunchtime concert recorded at the Wigmore Hall. Songs by Schubert, Zemlinsky and Grieg. And then at 2 o'clock, we're live at the Barbican Centre for a Christmas performance of Berlioz's L'Enfance du Christ. That's given by the BBC Symphony Chorus and Orchestra. Martin Handley presents at 2 o'clock. It's now coming up to 2 minutes past one, and time for the latest BBC news. The body of Nelson Mandela has been interred on his family's estate in the Eastern Cape. The burial was preceded by a state funeral attended by more than 4,000 people. African leaders, friends and relatives paid tribute to the man who led South Africa's transition from white minority rule. The current president, Jacob Zuma, said that while Mr. Mandela's long walk to freedom had ended, South Africans had to take his legacy forward. Hospital consultants may soon have to work at weekends as part of plans to tackle higher death rates for patients on Saturdays and Sundays. NHS England says it wants to ensure that hospitals are meeting clinical standards on diagnosis and staffing. The medical director, Professor Sir Bruce Keogh, says the changes will be brought in for urgent and emergency services over the next 3 years. Around 200,000 people have gathered in the centre of the Ukrainian capital Kiev for a rally protesting against President Yanukovych's refusal to sign a deal on closer EU integration. Opposition groups are demanding the resignation of the government and fresh elections for the presidency and parliament. A smaller pro-government demonstration is taking place nearby. The Transport Secretary, Patrick McLaughlin, has once again raised the prospect of a third runway at Heathrow Airport, saying the government hasn't ruled it out. He told the BBC that all options were still being considered and ministers were waiting for a government-appointed commission that's due to publish its recommendations on expanding the UK's airports on Tuesday. Cricket and England's hopes of retaining the Ashes are fading. On day three of the third test in Perth, Australia built up a large lead against England after a dismal display by the tourists. Resuming at the crease this morning, England lost their last 6 wickets for just 61 runs to concede a first innings deficit of 134, but then lost control in the field as Australia closed the day on 235 for 3. They lead by 369 runs. And the weather. A narrow band of rain will push eastwards across Northern Ireland and Scotland. Elsewhere, outbreaks of rain will move in from the southwest, some of them heavy at times. That's the news and weather on BBC Radio 3 at exactly 4 minutes past one. So now time for today's lunchtime concert, which was first broadcast live from the Wigmore Hall in London in April. The presenter is Fiona Torkington.
The Swedish soprano Camilla Tilling received high praise last year for her CD with the pianist Paul Ravinius of songs by Schubert. They're here at Wigmore Hall today, and I'm glad to say that Schubert is on the programme. There are the waltz songs by another Austrian composer, Zemlinsky, as well, and a Nordic composer to end with, Grieg's Six Songs, Opus 48. And it's Schubert first this afternoon, and five songs, beginning with his great Zuleika songs. In the first, the turbulent east wind, does it carry news of the beloved? Will it cool the heart's deep wound? And in the second, the west wind is mild and gentle, and the girl asks it to take a message to her lover. The third song, Du liebst mich nicht, is a restless tale of a broken heart. My heart is broken, but you don't love me. What does it matter if the flowers are blooming, the rose and the jasmine? Das sie hier gewesen, that she has been here, returns us to the east wind. The wind brings the perfumes of the loved one on its breezes. And finally, in this group of songs, Du bist die Ruhe, you are peace and rest, you are longing and what stills it. And here now are the soprano Camilla Tilling and the pianist Paul Ravinius to begin their concert today with five songs by Schubert.
Sure.